Of the Hornets, go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the Vegas play against. And Vegas has to win. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, same as it ever was. Happy New Year and another shot at a national title. Feels right, right?
Man, this is where we're supposed to be, right? This is a, you know, ever since they've started this little cockamamie idea to put down the SEC's dominance, we've been here four times, man. So it was good to take care of Clemson and it's even better to have an all SEC championship game coming up.
You know, there was a tweet that Alphonse Taylor had, and it kind of got a kick out of it. And he said, you know, imagine how many people are waking up Tuesday morning pissed off that there's two SEC teams in the national title game after the playoff was sort of invented as a convention to keep SEC teams out of the national championship. I thought that was pretty clever about old Alphonse.
No, man, it was funny. I saw that as well. And there is a lot of unhappy people between UCF alumni and then the rest of the country. You know, there will be some fun times in Atlanta, but I'm sure the TV ratings will still be high, but there will definitely be some people on the parts of the northeastern part of the country and the West Coast that will probably not be tuning in for this.
For all the excitement, you know, if I were the TV networks, I don't know that I would be so pleased about it, but hey, I'm not a TV network, so hey.
But you know, we say that, but then when Alabama played LSU, right, it blew up the TV ratings because what was it? It was a heavyweight slugfest, right? It was a hell of a football game. And this is going to be that as well. We'll get to that here later, but right. I think that might also, you know, bring some people. Traditional football lovers will enjoy that game. But let's start off with this game, man. What was the first thing that kind of jumped out at you on offense that, you know, that you want to talk to the listeners about?
You know, I think the big thing that sort of jumped out to me and probably near the top of your list as well is not only did we run the ball, but we handed the ball off. Damian had 19 carries, which itself is not a big number, but it's a big number relative to what he's been getting all season. And, you know, he had 77 yards. I mean, he's had single carries that were, you know, nearly that long. But the fact that he had 19 rushes, that we established the running attack with him, we continue to go back with him. What was it, just the Auburn game, he had six carries, seven carries, something like that. So the fact that we handed it off to him, you know, very intentionally, 19 times, established a rhythm, that's, I think, what stood out to me the most.
Well, and to your point, right, the Crimson Tide's, you know, top three running backs had 18 carries combined against Auburn, and here he has 19 carries in this game. And what was really surprising about that is that was a career high for him. And so, you know, with the two-headed monsters of years past, we talked about the starter would get 20 carries, right? And the backup would get 10 carries. And that would be kind of what would typically happen with this team. And obviously, yep, with Jalen Hurts calling his number more, you know, we've kind of gone away from that. And so I will tell you that it was nice to see Damian have 19. I wish he would have had a few more, because I actually think that he was the more effective guy in this football game. Take nothing away from Bo. But you know, when early in this game, when Damian came out for a blow and Bo came into the game, instead of running the ball up the middle, you know, they had first and 10 at the 15-yard line early in this game. And, you know, Damian rushes for 6 yards, sets up second and four. He comes out, you know, You're sitting here inside the 10-yard line, and instead of running the ball up the middle with Bo like you've been doing for Damian, you start pitching it wide with a team that's got a lot of lateral quickness in Clemson. And they've got two defensive ends that only go 265 pounds. And I think the way you attack speed is you go right at it. And so at the end of that second drive there, or second series, when Bo came in, you know, we put him in a situation where he can't be effective. And that was unfortunate, because I will tell you, David, man, we should have put this team away early in this game, and we didn't. And in my opinion, we were fortunate to win this ball game.
Well, I don't know fortunate to win the game. I think we were dominating, dominant, especially on defense. But I think we sort of dominated both sides of the ball, for the duration of the game. I'll kind of go devil's advocate with you a little bit. You know, I agree. I think I would have liked to have seen Damian get some of Bo's carries. But there at the end of the game, the last, instead of taking a knee, we were running Damian up the middle. And I was thinking, why the hell were we doing that? I think I would be just as happy if he had 17 carries, because I don't like him. I did not like his last two carries. But if he had three or four of Bo's carries, I think that would have been okay. Let me go devil's advocate with you on Bo. And tell me if I'm stretching this a little bit. But Bo was the running back that nearly beat Clemson last year. And I think we'd all agree, if he hadn't broken his leg in that game, we would have won that game. Alabama would have won that game. Bo would have, gotten him another 80 yards and such. And so, and we do pitch to Bo to the outside, a lot. So it's not outside of the game plan. But were we using Bo almost as like the shiny object to force the defense almost to overreact, force the defense to defend something other than just the middle of the field, make them run lateral, which makes the inside runs a little easier. And we're going to do it with this shiny object called Bo Scarborough that they know was kicking their ass last season. How much of a stretch is that? Or do you think there's a nugget there?
It's not a stretch. Okay. And obviously he has success when you put him out in space, but he has a big back. He needs to square up his shoulders. My point is on that second series, when they should have got a touchdown and not settled for a field goal, if you're going to go wide because Damian's been going up the middle three times in a row, then you go put Irv Smith in the slot and have him crack back on the outside linebacker. Two tight ends line up on the left side of the left tackle there, so that Bo's got to get ahead of steam. You got to get him going. If you recall against the Auburn in the Auburn game, where we came out the second half, right, and we were running the ball down their throats for those five carries, you had a different scheme of blocking for Bo to get him around the edge. And so you and I've always talked about the tall sweep, right? So in my opinion, you put Jalen Hurts under center there to show him something different. Put him under center, and you pitch it wide to Bo, and you have one or two tight ends over here blocking for him. Then Bo can do something with it, but not with the formation that they were in my opinion. So yes, I think it's different to think about, but I think you set Bo up for failure because, he kind of got the ball too late. The fast defense already had time to react. He couldn't square up his shoulders, and he couldn't get a steam, he couldn't get going, and so it just wasn't effective.
No, I think that's fair. I think I think we've kind of landed on something there, right? I think there's value in tossing it to him on the outside. There's value, that's where he has, some dynamic capability. You want to get the defense moving lateral to keep them, sort of on their toes anyways, but that's a good defense. It's a fast defense. And so everything worked there except for maybe the blocking alignment.
Well, and let me say this very quickly. So he comes in on that play and he gets 2 yards. Then on third and two, they go wide. They jump offside. They're in the neutral. They're lined up in the neutral zone. We have first and goal at the three, right? First and goal at the three. And so in my opinion right there, you go up the middle. What do you do instead? You pitch him wide again. He loses 6 yards, right? And now you're backed up to the 9-yard line. I didn't understand the sequence there. And so in my opinion, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think there's two different things that we're sort of kicking over, right? I think there's the philosophy of, getting Bo to the outside, which is not bad, and what that does to the defense. I think that could be blocked a little bit better. And then situationally, I didn't like some of the times that we did it. So you could do a good thing at the wrong time and it not be a good thing. And so, you're right there. When we had second and three, and that toss had not been working, probably not a good call to run again.
Right. Now let me go back to why I said what I said a minute ago about this ball game. How many times have you and I in years past of following this team, we will be sitting here making field goals and we'll be up 6-0 or we'll be up 9-0. The other team will get a big kickoff return for a touchdown and they're back in the game, right? And you and I'll be like, we let them stay in it. We let them stay in it. We let them stay in it. David, yep. They were at the 35-yard line with 9 minutes left in the game. Our 35, 2nd and 2, down 10-6. That's what I mean when I say we were lucky to win this game. So before all the listeners think I've lost my mind, of course, when we flip the field to the defense, we're going to talk about, in my opinion, in the next 4 minutes of football, the defense wins this game for us from taking a 10-6 game to a 24-6 game. But before that, they're at the 35-yard line, dude, on 2nd and 2, 5 minutes into the second half, and they have gotten their butt kicked, and they're only losing by 4 points. Why? Because our offense didn't do what they were supposed to do in the first half to put their foot on their throat and put the game away. And so in a second, I'm going to talk about some Jalen Hurts, because in my opinion, this game could have been lost by the ineffectiveness of our offense in the first half, who finished the first half with only 10 points, which I think was bad.
No, I see what you're saying. I think there was opportunity left there. And the offense didn't play to the same, standard, if you will, as the defense. And the defense did, make a significant contribution there. I probably got some good things I want to call out about Jalen, but it sounded like you had some thoughts to weave in there as well. Why don't you kind of walk us down the Jalen path?
Okay, so Jalen Hurts, obviously, okay, he has made progress in his second year. In my opinion, he still struggles to see the whole field. He still focuses too much on Calvin Ridley. And so after watching it, live in New Orleans, I came back and watched it on the TV screen so I could go back and break down some of these plays. Man, there was, on the touchdown to Calvin Ridley is a great example, okay, early in the first quarter there. He's back in the pocket. He's got all day to throw the ball. There is no safety in the middle of the field, okay? And Calvin turns his man out, and he basically turns in for the ball, and the ball should have been released. Jalen, from the camera angle behind Jalen in the pocket, it looks like he is clearly looking at Calvin Ridley. When Calvin Ridley cuts back into the right, the ball should have been released. And when Calvin turns, the ball should have been waiting on him. But instead, he sits there and holds on to the ball. So either A, he doesn't see him, or B, he just reacts entirely too slowly. And he sits there and he sits there and he sits there. And then he finally has pressure, so he has to spin and run for his life because Farrell is beating down his neck. And so then, thank goodness, as he's scrambling, Calvin Ridley bails him out and goes across the goal line, runs horizontal across the end zone. And thank goodness he sees him. And I think the only reason he saw him is because he was right in front of him. I think that Jalen Hurts really struggles to see the whole field. There's a reason why Calvin Ridley came into this game with 55 receptions and Bo Scarborough was the second on the team with 14. I mean, in my opinion, he looks for Calvin. He only looks for Calvin. And then when Calvin's not there, he takes off and scrambles. I mean, there were other times in this game, man, where Damian Harris would bleed out and he'd be right there in the middle of the field. And it would be like, 2nd and 5. And Damian was standing there and standing there and standing there. And Jalen Hurts didn't see him. He was waiting for Calvin to cut on a slant. He had Damian Harris right over the line there, waiting for the ball. Just dump it to him. He didn't even see the guy. Like two plays in a row, Damian Harris did it. He didn't see him. And so, my opinion very quickly is in the first half, we didn't have the success that we should have had on offense because of his ineffectiveness as a passer.
No, that's fair. And I think that, I think Jalen does continue to make, you know, good progress. I think that, and that's a, you know, that play, you know, that's one of those Saban specials, right? Everyone loves it because it, you know, because of the result. But I think it also showed some good, bad, some good Jalen, bad Jalen, right? And so, you know, could he or should he have, you know, all things being equal, seen and released the ball, you know, they're sort of at the first crease. Yeah, you can make a case for that. I think the fact that he, as he was running, I think Jalen last year would not have thrown that ball, you know, for the touchdown to Calvin. I think he would have, you know, tucked it and, you know, been tackled there at the three or four. So I'm not against what you said, but I do think it does show a little bit of his progression. And the fact that he was, you know, willing and able to put the ball up, you know, there was another play, that would have gone for a touchdown had, and it was one of our big strikes or attempted strikes down the field that would have gone for a touchdown, you know, had he hit him in stride, and, you know, that didn't happen. That would have been another opportunity to, you know, to tack on points.
All right, let me touch on that for a quick second on the flea flicker, right? Because I went back on the – when I watched it again, I watched the replay.
Yeah.
I counted the number of steps, Dave. So when Damian pitches the ball back to Jalen, he took 5 steps back, and then he threw off his back foot. And so you don't – so literally Todd Blackledge called him out on it. He's like, if he just throws it on time, it's an easy touchdown. Okay. Later in the ball game, he had Robert Foster on a play action pass. Robert Foster was going across the field.
Yes.
He sat there and delayed throwing the ball, and then he threw it short. Once again, Todd Blackledge, God bless you, Todd Blackledge, said, if he hits him on the run, it's a touchdown. So there's Calvin Ridley, flea flicker, touchdown. He missed it. Robert Foster, touchdown. He missed it. Now, let's go back to the second drive where we settle for a field goal. When Bo came in the game and we just talked about the runs wide and those things didn't work, right? Okay, great. Now you're sitting there 3rd and goal at the 6. Even after those lost plays, you're 3rd and goal at the 6. He's waiting for Calvin Ridley to come open. Bo Scarborough is standing at the 2-yard line by the sideline. Nobody is on him. Jalen Hurts is 8 yards in front of him. Bo is just standing there. And 3 seconds later, when Jalen looks his way, there's 2 guys covering him now. But had he thrown the ball to Bo Scarborough when he was first open at the 2 by himself, he could have tippy-toed and did his best ballerina impression and scored a touchdown. But instead, we had to settle for another field goal. You see what I'm saying? So my point is if you put all these things together, dude, we could have won this game by 40 points. We could have put this game away in the first half, and this game would have been done. Done. Right. That's all I'm saying. I got to be fair here. We left a lot of points on the table in the first half. A lot of points.
That's fair. You're never going to get all of them, but but your point's valid. I think that, you know, I brings things to the table that another quarterback wouldn't. But then he maybe doesn't have some of the things that, you know, that the other quarterback would. So, I think we net out in a good place with him. I just think when you think traditional pocket passing quarterback, which is what we've had at Alabama, that's not where his upside is. And so those are the things that maybe we've sort of trained ourselves to look for. And he does all of this other dynamic stuff and brings a lot to the table. It's just not the meat and potatoes, right?
Well,
that
I'm glad you said that very quickly, because prior to missing Bo, when Bo had lost 6 yards on 1st and goal, it's now 2nd and goal at the 14. Jalen Hurts scrambles on that play because there was nobody open, and he tippy-toed down the sideline in a very athletic play and gained 8 yards to make it 3rd and goal at the 6, right? That quarterbacks at Alabama before him could not have done. Quarterbacks before him at Alabama would have thrown the ball into the bleachers, and it would have been 3rd and goal at the 14. So let me be clear. the guy has moves like you can't imagine, and his composure is off the charts. I've never seen anybody with his composure. Okay. And when he threw the ball to Calvin Ridley for the touchdown, I did sit there in the stands and say he wouldn't have done that last year. So I have to agree with you on that. He would have run out of bounds there and gotten some positive yards, but he wouldn't have thrown it to Calvin. But what frustrates me is that there were other opportunities where, you know, it just doesn't seem like he's making his progressions and going to a second and third option. It seems like Calvin's the first option, and they're not really he's not seeing the other guys.
We don't see as much of that. I'll give you that. And he's had weeks this year, and you know, maybe it was a different defense where the defensive line wasn't as good, you know, this season, where he has shown that type of progression. But against a more stout defense, we don't see it as much. And that was my big fear going into this game. Is he going to feel, I use the term maybe overwhelmed, like he appeared in parts of the Auburn game and parts of, you know, the LSU game. And then, you know, the running option was him running the ball. And so I think, you know, the game plan to get the ball into someone else's hand, running the ball, settle him down a little bit. You know, he performed better, you know, if you compare it to the Auburn game. And I haven't run the numbers.
Oh, sure. But
just
sure.
His performance just seems – As not as a runner, but as a passer, his performance seems much better on just a one-to-one comparison. If you compare him to, you know, other games in the season, take Mississippi State, even where the team struggled, he looked really good throwing the ball around.
And he seemed more comfortable in that game. He seemed more comfortable in that game. Now let me ask you this. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So there was on the fourth drive of the first quarter, we had a second and 10 at the Clemson 34. And this is the drive that he threw the pass to Calvin Ridley later. Second and 10, we throw the ball to Irv Smith for 6 yards and make it a more doable third and 4. Okay. The reason I ask you about that is because, in my opinion, that was a play that was a quick play. It was designed to go to Irv Smith. It was an easy pass. Irv Smith has shown his ability to catch the ball as a mismatch against the linebackers. Guess how many times we attempted that easy pass that gave him a quick progression of where to go to with the ball?
Well, I think Irv had one catch. So.
Yes, that was the only catch. But why did we not do that more to give him some comfort? You see what I'm saying? It was an easy pass. We went to it one time. He was wide open.
Yeah.
We didn't go back to it the rest of the ball game. Now, I got another one for you. Henry Ruggs caught 2 passes for 25 yards. On both of those passes, we rolled Jalen out of the pocket. We gave him another launch point to be able to you know, to survey the, you know, got him away from the offense and defensive line, got him out of the pocket, gave him some comfort level, in my opinion. We only did that twice the whole ball game. So I would say, just to be fair, right, if he's not a pocket passer and he's an athletic guy, we need to roll him out 5 to 10 times a game. Let him throw some passes from outside the pocket, and I think he would have some more success.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, there's always sort of the things that we can do. I do like, you know, getting him in motion, because that can suck up the defense too, because he has the reputation as a runner. So just rolling him out will present as he's running. And I think there's definitely some things, you know, that we can see there. I think that, and this is sort of a, almost at this stage, right? There's one more game. We're not going to reinvent what we do.
No.
And his level of, you know, progression, so to speak, is going to be, you know, he sort of is what he is. I mean, that doesn't mean he can't have a really good day. It just, but right now he sort of is what he is. And so I'll say this, and then I think we unpack it at another time, but I think it's quarterback competition in spring practice.
I'm with you. I guess here's my frustration. His final stats were 16 of 24, right? Once again, he didn't throw an interception. Okay. And so not only does he show all this composure, which I'm sure the team feeds off of, and yes, he can make, and he can make, you know, he can make, you know, like he had a 19 yard carry that was a great play in the game. And he didn't throw a pick, right? He protects the ball. He doesn't give the ball away, which is critical to Saban, right? But he only had of his 16 passes, it was only 120 yards. They you know, for whatever reason, he only had the he only had six attempts of 10 yards or longer downfield. And of the six attempts, he completed three of them. Now, we just talked about two of them should have been for touchdowns. Of the three he completed, two should have been for touchdowns. But, you know, another thing I'd like to see him do more in this game, which they didn't. Okay, and I'm not giving sour grapes. I'm happy we won the game. I'm just saying that the defense played so well that we should have run them out of the damn Superdome, sure, is what I'm saying. And the other thing we didn't do enough of, in my opinion, is we didn't do enough play action. Because when you do have play action, he's not running for his life with an athletic team. Like it gave him time to sit in the pocket and go through his progressions. You see what I'm saying? Like when he had the pass to Robert Foster, which just got underthrown, it was on a play action and it worked. And AJ McCarron, dude, he's in the NFL now because of the play action, in my opinion, in Alabama, because the play action was so successful. And so if you've got a guy that is the, you know, that needs, I just think it would help his ability to stretch the field if they did more play action.
Yep. No, I think that's fair. I'm gonna inch us away from that topic a little bit, but I'm gonna throw a nod at Jalen and also to the play calling with this. This has sort of been a fun stat that we've brought out most of the season, and we look at the different players that have caught passes, and so, you know, you think of 16 passes and a lot of focus on Calvin, but there were actually nine receivers that caught the ball. And the mix I thought is pretty interesting. There were three wide receivers, one tight end, four running backs, and a defensive lineman, which we'll talk about that, you know, in a minute too, because that was something to see. But, you know, you think about 16, you know, completions, hitting nine different guys, that's spreading the ball pretty good. And that's that multiple that we have been talking about.
No, you are correct. And like one of those went to Najee Harris, and it was his only play of the game, yes, I believe. You know, it was great to bring him in on that play, and his one catch went for 22 yards. And, you know, there were some good play calls here, and it was good to spread the ball around to this many guys. Talk about a little bit about, or I want your opinion on, you know, there was a couple times in this game that we went to our unbalanced line where we brought in, you know, when it was like, we need to get a first down here. We would bring in Jedrick Wills at right tackle, and we would move Matt Womack over there outside of Jonah Williams. And we'd bring in, you know, Hale and Irvin Smith. And it was like, you know, we're running the ball and try to stop us. And we only did it twice in the game. And we literally like steamrolled them. I guess we did it three times. We steamrolled them twice, and then one time on fourth and a yard, you know, we easily got the first down. What'd you think about that, man? I thought that was nice, and I would have liked to have seen that a couple more times. I love the, you know, that's kind of like the whole I formation look, but it's just a little different with the unbalanced line. But how did you like that in the game?
No, I do like that. That is. You know, that's the type of formation that is highly situational. You know, you're not going to roll out on a first and 10 and do something like that, I don't think. And so I think it's highly situational. It's the kind of thing that, yeah, I'd like to see that more. But, you know, there's only a certain amount of, you know, circumstances or situations like that that are going to come up. And it's probably not your go-to formation in those plays. And so, you know, seeing it three is not a lot. You know, had it been, you know, four, five, you know, you reach a point where it's too many, I guess. I don't know. But I like that as a formation. I like that as challenge to the offense and you know, and it's a challenge to the defense as well, right? You kind of know what we're going to do. We're going to line up and we're going to play. This is just kind of old school lineup and man on man and beat your man. And, you know, we're either going to get it or we're not. Everyone knows what's about to happen. I guess I'm
saying in the first quarter when we had first and goal with the three, I would love for us to have lined up in that three times in a row and said, try to stop us. We're just going to run 3 yards and score a touchdown.
No, I think that's fair, right? I think you can get into circumstances, you can get into situations like that where you can, you know, I mean, you know, you and I say this in the stands all the time, line it up, run it again. Whatever that what you did there, again, and we've heard, how many times have we heard high school coaches sort of blow the whistle and they're doing it out of frustration, but, you know, you know, line it up, run it again. Well, sometimes, you know, you get 2, 3, 4 yards on a physical run. Hell yeah, line that up and run it again. So I agree. And, you know, you get sort of inside the, you know, the 4 to 6 yard line and you've got, you know, a couple downs to burn. Yeah, let's run that 2 or 3 times. I agree. And that's a fun one to see. I like, you know, Damian, you know, supermaning over the top for the first down. And I swear he was trying to land into the linebacker so that he could get his feet back under him. It looked like as soon as he hit the linebacker, he was trying to get that foot out there so he could sort of land and run. I like that tenacious attitude that he has, and it was good to see him sort of sky for the first down there.
No, absolutely. Real quick, you know, on Jalen Hurts on that 119-yard carry he had, I failed to mention that was another wrinkle that had been brought in. Josh Jacobs had motioned from the slot on the left into the backfield next to Damian Harris. And because Jalen is so athletic, you know, they did kind of an option look off of that. And it really gave the defensive end, you know, fits for Clemson, because now they're faking the trap, you know, to one back, and now they're coming wide to the right. And with Jalen, him being able to pitch it, I'd like to see some of that against Georgia. Just a couple times, bring that in the game, because I think that could be successful, that little option package.
No, that you know, that you're exactly right. The triple option there is not something we've seen a lot of. You know, he did fake the handoff to Damian up the middle and then, you know, sort of fake the pitch. Like you said, to sort of, you know, to keep the end honest on Jacobs, which created a running lane, you know, for Jalen. And Jalen, you know, did, you know, like you said, he got that 19-yard run there. And what was impressive in Jacobs is, you know, Jalen went to pitch the ball and then cut up. And so he was ahead of Jacobs as a result of that. And Jacobs, you know, sort of Jacobs took off running. He didn't just stop. He took off running to catch up with the play. He sort of bodied a man that was coming at Jalen to block there. And as Jalen sort of stepped to go out of bounds, you know, Jacobs went by him and blocked another man. And so I don't know if I stole somebody's mini game ball on that one, but the fact that he came in and blocked two people on that play, I thought that was impressive and showed sort of a spirit of, you know, competition there. You know, that, I mean, you get a gold star for that, you know, because you executed the play to perfection.
No, absolutely, man. Well, what else you got on offense before we do those mini game balls?
I've been sitting on that triple option thing, and then you went right to it, and you had mentioned that play twice, and I was like, he hasn't mentioned that, and then you came back.
Is that going to be your mini game ball for that play?
No, it is not. It is not. Okay. I have a different.
All right. Well, I'm going to do mine before you steal mine. And so mine has to go to Daron Payne, and I don't care that he's not, you know, I don't care that he's not mini game ball worthy. And if you want to do it, you know, if you want to double down, that's all good. But, you know, number one, I've heard for a year, right, that the Clemson pick play on the line of, throwing to Hunter Renfrow with 1 second left in the game was legal, right? And I've heard it so much, I'm sick of it. And so I don't know if they put this wrinkle in just to be a smart aleck or what, but it was obvious a pick play by us. It was obvious should have been called, but I thought it was great. I mean, Quinnen Williams literally just steamrolled through both of those guys. It was a worse pick play than Clemson should have got called for. And so the fact that we scored a touchdown on a pick play to a defensive lineman in a very obvious we're picking you fashion after we lost with 1 second last year to them, dude, that was awesome. I totally love that.
No, I hear what you're saying, and that was an awesome play too, and that's well worth a mini game ball. I think that I look at it a little differently, and if I'm not trying to wear a homer's hat here, I'm really not. At it as that's a running formation, and those are fullbacks essentially, and they're defensive linemen, but they're lined up in a fullback position, and Quinnen, he blocked the defensive end. And he didn't go downfield to do it. He blocked the defensive end at the line, and it had every appearance of a run play. When you've got two wide receivers, a slot and a wide out, that are 10 yards, 12 yards off the line of scrimmage, that's not a run play. They're not run blocking. There's no pretense that that's a run block. But when your fullback comes off the tackle's ass and plugs someone, That is what run blocking is. So I mean, it wasn't an illegal block downfield. That was just a run pass option where the fullback took out the end and the second fullback became the receiving target. So I don't know if that's going to come across to homerism, but I just see that completely different.
All good, man. Hey, you know what? We didn't get a yellow handkerchief, and we did it back to them. So I can see your side of it, but I think that if Quinnen Williams would have stayed kind of at the line of scrimmage and wouldn't drove the guy into the cornerback, you know, 5 yards down the field, it is why I think they could have called it. Don't get me wrong, I'm glad they didn't. And then when Deron Payne kind of like, you know, tippy-toed both feet inbounds inside the end zone, oh, that was freaking awesome. That was great, man. That was awesome.
I get why he did it. It was completely unnecessary, but it was no less awesome.
It was. He was like, this is my spotlight and I'm taking it. So it was.
I'm taking every ounce of this spotlight.
It was great.
So that's awesome.
Well, give me your mini bank.
I'm giving my mini game ball, and I think this is worthy of a minute of conversation just by itself, but I'm giving it to JC Hasenauer. Lester Cotton went down with an injury. Lester was having, I think, a really, really good day, and JC came in, and there was really no, you know, perceivable drop off. And you know what's interesting, and sometimes I don't know if it's just like the luck of Saban or just, you know, kind of how, you know, a plan comes together sometimes, but you know, Hasenauer is fresh from playing because he stepped in for Pierschbacher. A couple of games, and he performed very, very well in that capacity. And so the fact that he wasn't a guy that's been sitting on the bench all season. He's a guy that's played very recently. And oh, by the way, we need you to step in and play guard at the other side. And it just felt like, oh, okay. I mean, I hope Cotton's okay, but I don't feel bad about Hasenauer being in there. And so I give him a mini game ball just because he came in. There was no drop off. If he has to play in the national championship, I'm not going to lose sleep over that. There's a reason Lester Cotton's the starter, and I think he's the bigger, more physical guy. But I mean, hell, you know, Hasenauer was SEC lineman of the week. You can't argue with that. I don't know if we want to talk about that a little bit, but I just give a nod for him stepping in. And it was another week where he probably didn't think he was going to play, and then he was thrust into, a pivotal, role.
No, sure. Lester was having a great day. Lester was his physicality, his strength at the point of attack against Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence was needed inside because I was concerned about those two guys. And Lester was having a great game. And so it was nice that when JC did come into the game, you know, that it was a 24-6 ball game versus, a 7-6 ball game. But definitely hope that Lester can be healthy. And I hope they have both of them as, you know, options for the game. Go ahead.
I was going to say Lester's physicality. He's as athletic, and he's certainly bigger. But his physicality reminds me of a Chance Wormack.
Yes, and I think he's equally as strong as Chance Wormack. Yep. And he was going against, you know, two big defensive tackles. And Christian Wilkins, you know, new starter, backup last year. Dexter Lawrence, 6'5", 340 pounds, you know, was the defensive, you know, player in the country last year coming out of high school. You know, I think he's going to be a beast. Hopefully he'll leave after his junior year. But he had, you know, I was definitely concerned going into this game about our two guards and center matching up with Wilkins and Lawrence for sure. Well, talk to me about defense. What jumps out at you on defense? Because obviously, you know, that pivotal 4 minutes in the third quarter, you know, took a 7-6, you know, took a 10-6 ball game and kind of changed it completely.
You know, I think there were a couple sort of key moments on, you know, on the defense. Certainly, you know, the two interceptions, you know, that was a pivotal sequence. I think one of in light of those, because they both sort of yielded touchdowns, and that's sexier headline. But I think one of the pivotal, you know, moments in the game was when there was the fumble, when Jalen and Damian sort of had the faux pas on the exchange. The ball was on the 20. I mean, they could have lined up and kicked a field goal just right, straight up, right there. And you think, oh, and it was a tight ball game. It was a one score game, and the fact that the defense not only held them but pushed them back. You know, they got the ball in the 20. They kicked from the 25. And so you don't hear of this very often, but they ran for -2 and then passed for -3. I don't know how often you see a pass play result in -3, but that's pretty darn impressive. And, you know, it was 10-3 at that point. Now, they got the field goal. I think we would have given them the field goal, you know, on first down. So we didn't like it being 10-6, but we like it better than it being 10-10. And, Tommy, I thought, you know, this is one of those things. Coming out of half, we had the possession. We were dominating, you know, the time of possession. We were dominating the ball. We were constraining their offense. All of those things were sort of stacked in our favor. But the score was close. And had they punched that in, it potentially is a different outcome. And so I think that was a pivotal sequence there by the defense. And then obviously, you know, two touchdowns in 4 minutes, you're never going to argue with that.
Not at all, but you know, I'm glad that, you know, Kelly Bryant, first year starter, was the guy in that situation.
Oh,
because you know, if we had the other Clemson quarterback from last year, I think it would have been a different circumstance. And you know, this guy was rattled. And on 3rd and 15 at the 25, when he ran for no gain, he came off the sideline to an earful from Dabo Swinney. And the camera showed Dabo Swinney dressing him down. And I got to tell you, Saban needs to dress down Jalen Hurts some, okay? Sometimes he needs to get in his ear and chew him out a little bit the way he did quarterbacks that were, you know, that preceded him. And so kudos to Dabo for doing that, because I'd like to see us do that. You know, I'd like to see Saban jump on some guys more, offense and defensive side of the ball, you know, when needed. But I do think that was a key moment there that occurred. And, you know, I will tell you that in that 4 minute sequence in the third quarter there, you know, it was a 10-6 game and they were on our 35-yard line. And so, you know, Anthony Jennings, you know, made a huge play there, you know, when the freshman tailback, you know, blew his blocking assignment. Right? How many times we talk about young running backs are not in the game in key moments because, you know, of their pass protection. But for Anthony Jennings to get to that guy before he can release the ball so it's not an incomplete pass. And then Deron Payne having the presence of mind because of his athleticism, which we saw, you know, years ago, to be able to catch that ball like he did, you know, that was huge. And
yes.
You know, that was a game changer, because this was still a close game. And then on the very next series, you know, Levi Wallace, as you've talked about, you know, former walk-on, you know, he had a tough matchup because it was going to be in this ball game, you know, the Deion Kane, Levi Wallace show. And, you know, Deion Kane was their guy. And you know, they were going to pick on Levi Wallace. They were, that's the guy they were going to pick on. And so Deion Kane had caught a couple balls early. And on that play, Levi Wallace played great coverage. He got his hand around Deion Kane. He didn't grab a jersey. He didn't do pass interference. He got his hand around there and tipped the ball in the air. And then Mac Wilson, man, who I want to talk about here in a minute, you know, no surprise. Mac Wilson's Johnny on the spot the way Daron Payne was, and, you know, got the ball out of the air and took it to the house. And so I think at that point, you know, game was over. I mean, Clemson's heads were down, and that was a knockout punch.
No, you kicked off a couple of sparks there. You know, Anfernee Jennings, again, Daron Payne had the interception and, you know, the big man lumbering downfield. That's what everyone remembers. But Anfernee Jennings had a phenomenal day, or was having a phenomenal day just anyways. And when he hit Kelly Bryant on that play, you know, we've both heard the expression, you know, defensive coaches say, tackle the spot that's 6 inches behind the ball carrier. So you're tackling through the ball carrier. And that just watching that play kind of over and over again, that's what Anthony Jennings did. He was running through Kelly Bryant like he was a paper mache wall or something. And it just caused the errant throw. I thought his play all by itself, if the ball just dribbled harmlessly down on the ground, that play by itself was pretty darn impressive. And in the fact that it ended in the turnover, that's what Saban, you know, when Saban lays awake at night and thinks about affecting the quarterback, that's what he thinks about.
No, absolutely, man. And to, you know, to stick on Anfernee Jennings for a minute, you know, these Bama guys had time to get healthy. And Jennings is one of the many linebackers who, you know, has missed time throughout the season. And so he looked healthy. And this is the guy that I think they saw in fall camp. And this is the guy that I think that this is what they – okay, in this game – he played like a guy who was finally healthy, and it's a shame he got, you know, banged up here at the end. He's a guy that looked healthy for the first time all season. And I got to tell you, because obviously with his physique, you know, going in, he's, you know, this is a guy that has reminded me this is a guy that has reminded me for a while of a guy that has the potential to be the next Courtney Upshaw player for Alabama. Because he's 6'3", 260 pounds. And, you know, this is a big loss for them next week, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. But this was by far his best game of the season.
No, you're exactly right. And the commentators, you know, made the comparison as well. You know, if this guy, you know, sort of, you know, probably ought to remind you of, you know, one Courtney Upshaw, and, you know, and he certainly does, and he'll be missed. You know, the other linebacker, you know, Mac, I thought played really, really well. You know, Christian Miller was in there. I didn't really see a lot necessarily from him. You know, Terrell Lewis, you know, was in there. We're going to need to see more from them, and we can certainly, you know, talk about that. You know, you talked about Levi and the matchup that he had with the receiver Kane. I thought that I got the impression that and they were right. I get the impression that they were definitely picking on, you know, Levi Wallace. You know, he had 6 tackles, 2 pass deflections. And so he rose to the occasion. But do you think it's interesting that if that was maybe that's the matchup that they wanted, but then it wasn't, I mean, and they caught a pass or two against him, but it wasn't working the way that they wanted to work. Why don't you think they tried to move him around or try to create a mismatch somewhere else?
Well, but I think when they looked at the matchup, right, they weren't going to pick on Anthony Averett, and they weren't going to pick on Minka. And so if you've got your choice between Wallace and Minka and Averett, you're going to go Levi Wallace. And so
what, let me, but why would you not pick on, and I'm asking, right, why would you not pick on Anthony Averett? He's the guy that turned his ankle stepping off the bus into a pothole. And, you know, by the time they got to practice that day on that Friday before the game, he couldn't even walk. He had to be helped into, you know, training. And so, you know, there was some question as to, you know, whether or not, you know, what level of ability, you know, is this guy going to be able to have on the field? And so why don't you intentionally try to test him out? And, you know, he had a couple tackles, but I don't recall them intentionally going at Anthony Averett. And I just found that very interesting.
Well, I think to your point, it wouldn't have hurt to try to see how the ankle was doing for Averett. It wouldn't have hurt to take Ray McLeod and Deion Kane and switch them, right? And try to go either have Ray go against Anthony Averett or move Deion Kane over there to try to have him go at Averett. And to your point, they could have done that early in the game and just said, let's just do a check. Let's just check and see here. How's he doing? And if he makes a play, then okay, he's better. So let's go, you know, let's go pick on the red, you know, the walk on, former walk on now. So right. that is interesting. Now I got to tell you, and so I do agree with you there. I have to tell you that a few nights ago, I was listening to the interviews before the game, and I was listening to the interviews of the select players and coaches, and obviously one of the players for the defensive side of the ball was Minkah Fitzpatrick. And during this interview, he talks about the fact that he's going to stay at the Star. And you and I did not have a chance to talk about this before the game, but we talked about the fact that last year, had Eddie Jackson not got hurt, then I think we would have won the national championship. Because when Eddie Jackson got hurt and they proceeded to take Minkah and move Minkah to the safety, Hunter Renfrow ate us up on third and short, right? Five or six third down conversions. And so in this game, a healthy Minkah Fitzpatrick who comes back from, you know, from his hammy, his ability to line up in the Star and play on Hunter Renfrow and shut Hunter Renfrow down, I think was a huge difference in this game. Hunter Renfrow finishes with five catches on the game, but dude, he didn't have his first catch of the ball game till the start of the fourth quarter.
Right. No, he was definitely shut down. And you know, when you talk about Minkah, you know, and some of this is going to be injury and some of this is going to be, you know, play calling, but we only sent Minkah after the quarterback just a couple of times. And more recently, we've been playing him. And again, it's injury, hamstring. We've been playing him much closer to the box. We've been sending him after the quarterback much more aggressively. And so, you know, you start to study film on that and you start to maybe expect that nearly every snap in coverage. And that's a great place for him to be, right? Because he's so talented at it. And it also sort of shows his versatility, you know, compared to what he had been doing. But that puts a lot more talent, coverage talent out in the field as opposed to, you know, sneak attacking the quarterback.
Oh, absolutely, man. But in this interview he did before the game, he talked about last year in the national championship game that sometimes he was covering grass. Why? Because he was 25 yards off the ball, and he's your best player in the back of the defense. Well, if he's playing center field 25 yards off the ball and all he's doing is covering blades of grass, right? While Hunter Renfrow is Wes Welkering your ass to death. And so, in my opinion, when Hootie Jones went down at the end of the Auburn game, my first thought was, oh my gosh, they're going to move Minkah where Hootie was.
Yeah.
And the fact that they took Deontay Thompson and coached him up over the past month, as you and I've talked about, right? It's like a whole nother fall camp, right? He's had 4 weeks. Minkah was talking about in his press conference how every day after practice, Deontay was like, hey, Minkah, you want to go watch film? Hey, Minkah, can we go watch film? Do you have a few minutes? Minkah said he spent 30 to 45 minutes every day for the past month with Deontay Thompson. Right? Kudos, Deontay Thompson, because it allowed Minkah to stay 5 yards off the ball. Now, you ask about Minkah not rushing the quarterback. In my opinion, the reason he didn't have to rush the quarterback is because Terrell Lewis and Christian Miller were healthy for the first time after missing 12 ball games.
And Anthony Jennings as well.
Yes.
I think also you don't want to flush a mobile quarterback.
No, you don't. But I will tell you, man, that in my opinion, okay, we have in the first ball game, we had 5 sacks against the Florida State quarterback with a healthy Christian Miller and Terrell Hall. We have our Terrell Lewis, excuse me. Now we have not had that presence, and so in my opinion, we had to send Minkah because we had to try to get pressure on the quarterback. Now, here's the other thing, you know, with Dylan Moses getting hurt a week ago, after he had kind of taken over for Sean Dion Hamilton, what a blessing for Mack Wilson to be able to get healthy over the past month after having foot surgery the day after the LSU game. Now, we talk about Anthony Jennings and him reminding me of Courtney Upshaw. Mack Wilson will be the next Dante Hightower. He looks like Dante Hightower when he was young.
He said Mack Wilson, this guy is going to be an
absolute beast next year. In my opinion, he had foot surgery. So guess what?
Like Dante Hightower
that happened in this ball game.
Yes.
He's a young Dante Hightower. Minkah was able to stay in coverage.
So Mack Wilson,
but because of Mack Wilson and because of his comfort level in the middle of the field and what he had shown to do before that foot surgery, it allowed Rashawn Evans to roam all over the line of scrimmage, and they put him to the left and rush the quarterback, and they put him to the right and rush the quarterback.
Yes.
And guess what? Last year against Clemson, he didn't get to do that because he had to play for Sean Dion Hamilton. And so in my opinion, the other story behind the story in this game is Rashawn Evans got to be Rashawn Evans because of Mack Wilson.
And he ended up having a phenomenal game. He got a sack, a pass deflection, and 9 tackles. So, you know, unleashed to sort of do what he does, he did pretty good.
Yes, but what they did was is they put Mack Wilson by himself, the only linebacker in the middle of the field, and they left him on an island by himself. And they were okay with that, David, because they had Tony Brown in and a dime, and they had Minkah in. And so they said, okay, we're going to put one linebacker, Mack Wilson. We're going to do a dime in the back on 3rd and 10. And we've got Mack help because we got 6 DBs in the game. And then they were able to get pressure on the quarterback with only 4 guys. Right. And so I don't know.
And I'm not mad at Dylan Moses, and I'm certainly not happy that he's injured. I'd rather have him, you know, in the stable. But I don't know that had Dylan been available and Mack not, felt comfortable doing that with Moses at this stage in his development. I mean, he's still a true freshman versus a sophomore.
No, to be fair to Dylan Moses, Jeremy Pruitt also said in his interview that Dylan Moses had been asked to step in and they had moved him inside because of the injuries. So in my opinion, because Sean Dion Hamilton goes down and Mack Wilson goes down at the same time, you have to move Dylan Moses inside. I think Dylan Moses is more comfortable outside. And so I don't think he has the same comfort level at the middle linebacker position as he does, you know, at the will position. And so I think the position backing up Rashawn Evans is going to be his position. Now, what's fun to think about is while it's going to be tough to lose Rashawn Evans, it's nice to think next year about a team with Dylan Moses and Mack Wilson on the field at the same time.
With Christian and Anthony.
And Terrell.
Yes. Holy wow.
That's gonna be
impressive. I don't know how you pick a starting group out of that bunch, but it'd be like hockey lines, right? We'll have 2 that can go. So that's nice. What do you think? Anything else on defense, or you want to go mini game ball?
Very quickly. Not only did a guy like Mack Wilson step up, but Raekwon Davis had a phenomenal game, and we can't leave the show without saying it. And so, because we had LeBrian Ray back, who got a couple snaps, and because we had Quinnen Williams, and we had Bugs, and because we had Terrell Lewis and Christian Miller back, we were able to keep guys like Isaiah Bugs fresh, right? Pond fresh, and Deshaun Hand fresh. And Raekwon Davis, dude, they played him man-on-man, and he kept beating solo blockers one-on-one. And this is the guy that, you know, when he came here, we said, this guy's a beast, right? This guy's a beast. Well, you know, Todd Blackledge was talking about in practice last week, he was talking smack, and I can't remember which of the leaders on the defense turned to him and said, Raekwon, you're the biggest talker we have. Stop talking and just go make plays. Well, guess what? I don't know what they said to him, and I don't know what day of the week it was last week, but dude had a great freaking ball game, and he's a specimen at 6'7", 306 pounds, and I'm just so happy for the guy because he played a hell of a football game.
No, I agree. I one comment, I was going to work this in on defense and I haven't yet, so I'm just going to hit it now. I saw Saban after, it was really after the game telecast. He was on, Scott Van Pelt's, late night sports center, and he did like a 4-minute hit there. And, Saban's sort of by the book, and you can almost, one of his press conferences sound like, the next one, you can almost, anticipate sort of the cadence of what he's going to say. But, one of the things that he said, and he said it three times, and it really jumped out to me because it's not a word that he uses all the time. And then to repeat it, it was surprising to me, but he called it a ferocious defensive performance. And to me, that sort of speaks to how pleased and proud he was of the defensive performance. He knew that the defense, just like we've talked about, shouldered the load, that they had a tough challenge. They rose to the occasion. He was so pleased. And then he branded it, a ferocious performance. And then in the SEC teleconference, and so a couple of days later, when he's had a chance to sort of, decompress from the moment, he used the word ferocious again. And he was asked, and this is Saban, who when you ask him to compare, he hates, despises, comparison questions. And, but he jumped into a comparison question, and, he compared, or he marked as two of his, most memorable defensive performances, Monday night in the playoff game against Clemson. And he put that on par with 2011 LSU beating LSU for the national title that night, coincidentally also in New Orleans. That's pretty high praise. And for Saban to use that word and repeat it, four times across those sessions, he must really be pleased with how that defense have performed. And I think that sets the stage well, for them to compete this Monday night.
No, man, those are not words you normally hear Saban use. And for him to say ferocious twice is definitely a big deal for sure. Give me your mini right. game ball. Who you got for that?
I'm going to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Huntsville's own, the Honorable Judge Will Powell. He sent a message and said, we need to give mini game balls to the entire defense for their performance on the three and out that we talked about after the fumble. And I think he's right. We've got two guys, and we mentioned both of them that could be, equal candidates for the mini game ball. I'm going Anthony Averett. Here's a guy that might not would have played, but he did. There was an interview with him, and he said that he, even during the game, he was playing through some pain, but the fact that he went out there such a level. I mean, we talked about maybe they should have taken a shot at him. I think they should. But he played at such a level that you have to think, with them watching them, they didn't sort of change their mind. They didn't say, hey, he's playing off, or hey, he's not covering, or hey, he can't cut, or hey, he can't do this. He demonstrated none of that. So they didn't even take a shot at it, which, if I were them, I probably still would have. But the fact that he rose to the occasion as well, tip of the hat, mini game ball to Anthony Averett. The type of story, and it's why we do mini game balls, right? It's the type of thing that gets lost in the wash, but, contributed, I think, mightily to the overall defensive performance.
All right, man. Well, I got two real quick. First of all, we talked about Terrell Lewis, all right, and we talked about Christian Miller and their effect coming back. Well, Terrell Lewis was in the game on the fifth play of the game, and it was on a third down play on defense. And he proceeded to come in very often on third downs early in the game. And then later in the game, he started coming in on first and second downs as well. He almost had an interception. He got credited with the pass deflection instead. He only had two tackles on the day, but he was in the backfield constantly. One play where Kelly Bryant scrambles for his longest carry of the day, you know, he chases him from the backfield, you know, 20 yards down the field. And this guy's going to be a stud. We said it last year when he would come in and mop up duty against the non-conference opponents and, you know, have five tackles in the fourth quarter. And so we knew this guy was going to be a stud. And glad to see him back in this game. And then also to your boy, Deontay Thompson, as we talked about, Deontay Thompson, credit to you for seizing your opportunity in your first start of your career, because had you not stepped up, Hunter Renfrow would have beat our butt with a sledgehammer again, third and four, third and five, and third and six. Mm-hmm. And so I think Deontay Thompson was a huge key in this game to come in and to try to play for Hootie Jones.
You know, I was wavering between, you know, Anthony and Deontay for my mini game ball. So I'm glad you got him in here. Let me just ask this question. He's got to learn the playbook, and he is, but so you kind of, yes or no, is he an upgrade over Hootie Jones, all things being equal?
I think that he has better range. He has better range. He doesn't have the same knowledge of the defense that Hootie does. Hootie probably, at the beginning of the season, Deontay Thompson probably wasn't tackling quite the way that maybe he wanted to. I think he's actually worked on that a lot. And so in what I saw the other night, I think it was an upgrade as to this stage of the season. But I wouldn't have said that 6 weeks ago.
Fair. I think that makes sense. Yeah, it does. I think that's fair. The more I thought about it, you know, and again, I never root for injury, especially, you know, our own guys. I like the depth. I like to have the full stable. I like the consistency of the players that are out there and used to performing with one another. The fact that we had, you know, more of the ball practice allowed a guy like that to step in and get some more reps. And I was of the mindset, and had we done a pregame show, we would have talked about it there. I was of the mindset that, hey, if he gets it down, if he's far enough sort of in his time on the team, his time in the system, that if he gets it, then it's an upgrade. But we have to see that. And I think that, and I'll sort of double down on this. I think that we're losing just a flat ton of guys from the secondary this year. And the fact that Deontay Thompson can come in and get some reps and some starts in these high pressure packed games, he's going to be one of the starters next year and maybe one of the stars of the defense next year.
No, absolutely. Because like we talked about, right, we're going to lose, you know, four cornerbacks and one safety. Or excuse me, two safeties. We're basically losing six DBs, right. Which is, you know, huge. Let's flip the field to special teams real quick. Let's right. talk about your boy JK. Clemson's average starting field position in this game was their own 25-yard line. And I think J.K. Scott had a lot to do with that.
You know, he did have a lot to do with that. And, you know, I always kind of go in and look at the stats, you know, so I have them. And I was kind of surprised that his stats were subpar, because what I remember of the game is that they did start further back so much of the contest. But out of his, you know, I think he had, what, six punts and averaged 35 yards a punt, none inside the 20. So it wasn't even him trying to, you know, a short kick for the sake of keeping it in the 20. So none were inside the 20, and his long was only 41. And so it's hard to sort of juxtapose, you know, the net is they were backed up, but you know, JK didn't have an outstanding night. You know, it was all that we needed, which is good. We've needed him to flip the field for us before. Unfortunately, we did not need a whole lot of that. But I just thought that was a very, you know, for JK, I thought that was a very pedestrian night.
Well, here's what I'll tell you. I think that, you know, the way the stats keepers logged it, showing none inside the 20, you know, they just kind of miscalculated that, because he actually had his his first two kicks, he pinned them back inside the 20. And so he actually pinned them down. He pinned him at the 16 on his first punt, and the second punt, Hunter Renfrow caught it at the 10-yard line. And so his stats got skewed a little bit because he wasn't punting the ball very far. And but he ended up getting three of his six punts inside the 20. And so I think the stat guy, you know, he needs to put down the bourbon until the game's over. But definitely, you know, JK didn't have any booming punts, right? He didn't have any of those. He didn't have any of those 50 plus yarders that we're used to seeing. But what he did do, which was interesting to me, and I know you noticed this during the ball game, is just his hang time. He caught the ball. He punted it so high in the dome that by the time the ball got down there, we had guys like circling the punt returner. Like we had guys like behind him, in front of him, beside him. And so I think he just kind of showed a different repertoire of his arsenal of that strong leg of his. And so it's just not the average that we're used to seeing, but I think he still was kind of effective for us.
No, I think that's compelling, right? Because they kept talking about, you know, Clemson's dangerous return guys, and so it makes sense, right? Because you can punt it. There's a lot of different things you can do when you're punting the ball, and maybe sort of booming it for the hang time to minimize. You know, Saban likes his floor, right? And so we're going to set the floor with a shorter kick, but they're not going to gain a yard because we're going to sky kick it. And then we're going to, you know, TP around the guy so that he can't run it. So that makes a lot of sense. And it sort of contributes back to, and if I had a bad stat about, you know, inside the 20, then that's good too, because I was surprised to look at the stats because my sense from the game was that
From watching the game, you saw those plays. It's just the stats guy needs to put the bourbon down. And he did have a 38-yard punt at one point in the game where they started it. They started it like the 32-yard line, and it was only a 38-yard punt. And that was of his six punts. That was not his best one. But yes, I think your eyes are correct from what you saw. He did have a better game than the stats guy was giving him credit for.
Okay, good. So I don't have to put the bourbon down. So that's a win.
Correct. No, absolutely. And then as far as you know, the other thing I'll say very quickly, five-star number one running back in the nation, Najee Harris, who didn't get to play but one offensive play. He was lined up wide to rush the punter. And a couple of times he was rushing the Clemson punter like with just absolute reckless abandonment, and he was going at him as fast as he possibly could. And I just thought that was awesome, because here's this guy, you know, who's a stud running back, and he's sitting here on special teams hauling butt at the punter with his speed, giving it all he's got, because it's his chance to show the coaches what he could do. So I just thought that was cool.
No, I think that's great. I think Andy, you know, he made one and missed one. The one that he missed was certainly from a makeable distance. And he even had sort of two cuts at it, and, you know, one was worse than the other. What do you think about I'll say both of these and we can kind of react to them together. Trayvon Diggs sort of back returning punts. I thought that was interesting. He had to open the game on the opening kickoff. He had a phenomenal tackle. But then in the punt return duty, he was in there. And we had said a couple weeks ago that we thought, you know, the job was Xavier Marcus's, and so we thought we were done with that. And then Henry Ruggs actually returned some kicks that would have gone into the end zone, and he had three kick returns for 48 yards. What do you make of sort of the personnel and the return decisions?
So the return decisions on Ruggs was not what, you know, we would like by the rule book. Trayvon Diggs, I think that was a whole nother fall camp, 4 weeks to get back in the good graces and show what he can do. And so he obviously has the athleticism. He has the prototypical size and speed and elusiveness and all those things. But obviously I think he took those 4 weeks to his advantage, to maybe win over the coaches, to get the nod, you know, to get the nod over Marks.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think also, And I would say this about both. I think Saban was taking a calculated low risk bet on potential upside, because the athleticism in the return game of Diggs and Ruggs is better than Marks and taking the ball in the 25.
Yes.
And the risk is manageable small.
Yes, but there was a couple times you know, it would have been nice to go ahead in this game with field position being at a premium, right? To be able to start at the 25-yard line.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. So that, you know, not all of the bets paid off, but you know, he was 3 for 48. And of course, my kick return math is if you get it on the 25 three times, that's 75 yards. So
absolutely. Well, man, let's flip to the next ball game here. This all SEC national championship. These two guys know each other very well. You know, Kirby joined Saban back in 04. He was with him for what, 12 years. And so 11, 12 years. So what do you think is going to happen in this game? Because when Georgia played Auburn, they were the leading rushing team in the SEC. Auburn was able to shut down the run, and they basically won the first time they played each other, because Georgia has not given their quarterback, they haven't allowed him to carry the load. They haven't allowed him to throw many passes. And so
right.
You know, this is a good matchup for us, because this is not a running quarterback. I think this is a much better matchup than Oklahoma would be for us.
Oh.
And I think if we're able to shut down this run, man, I think we win this one.
No, I agree. I think that, you know, the group of four that made the playoff, I thought was the strongest group of four that they've had, you know, in sort of the playoff model. I think that the only team amongst the four that I really wanted to line up and play against was Georgia. And so if you want me to be really honest, I was nervous significantly so going into the Clemson game, and the thought of, you know, we get to play Clemson for maybe the opportunity to play to Oklahoma. It's a nightmare, right? I did not want to play those teams back to back. We handled Clemson much more effectively and efficiently than I thought. And the fact that we get to now kind of play Georgia, and look, I don't want to take anything away from them. I just think, you know, they're the style of play that, and we've talked about this on the podcast for years, right? Who did we go out and get to be sort of the quote unquote big name opponent that we started the season with? We went and got a Wisconsin. We went and got a Michigan. We went and got, you know, teams that just, they sound flashy name wise, but they are the type of teams that we pulverize. And so this Georgia team is better, but you know, they're a type, right? And in a lot of ways, they're sort of, they are us and we are them. I just think we have probably a deeper roster, but you know, offensively and defensively, if you look at all of the stats, yardage and yards allowed and points and yards per play and rushing and passing and all of that stuff, we're mirror images. You know, we're a little bit ahead, a notch ahead in most of the stats, but they're right there. You know, they have a strong rushing attack. You know, probably the names of their running back are, you know, people are going to say that they have a stronger rushing attack because they know all of the names. And they've got sort of a steady game manager plus quarterback. It's another young guy that, you know, that's pretty calm and steady in the pocket. I think it's going to be the kind of game that people who appreciate football are going to really, really enjoy this. The people from, you know, the coasts that are looking for a certain brand of football, they're going to be turned off by it. I see it being some sort of almost some flaky, you know, 8-4, you know, 9-6 kind of score at halftime. TV, you know, people go to, oh, it's going to be some of those numbers. Like, how do you get to those numbers in football? Which just, when you see a flaky number, you just know defense did something. And so I think at half is going to be some sort of flaky number. I think whoever, you know, if there's a turnover, the game can ride on that. If there's a big special teams play, the game can ride on that. Otherwise, it's pounding the other team's defense into submission. And I think it's probably a close game at half. I wouldn't be surprised if we're trailing. I think it's a 24-17, you know, kind of game at the end. I think it's what football I'll say this and you'll agree. It's this game will be what football ought to be. People are sort of trained for football to be something different and they won't know what to do with this.
No, that's fair. This game to me is going to be like the Alabama LSU game in 2011.
Yes.
And you know, the nation was disgusted with that game, but it was two great teams, you know, beating up each other. And because what? It's the best conference in football, right? And so that's what I think this is going to be. And what's interesting about this is they bring a they don't have the size that Clemson has. And so, you know, they don't have, you know, they got a couple 300-pound guys, but they don't have the depth, like you said, and they do not have, you know, they obviously have some phenomenal players, right? Roquan Smith, you know, being the leader of that defense. But I just think that if we line up and we run the ball between the tackles to set up the play action pass, I think we can control the clock and I think we can put this team on their heels. And I think we can keep the ball away from those two great running backs they have. And so I see this being a final score of 17-6, Alabama. I think we're going to, you know, give up a couple field goals. I don't think we're going to give up a touchdown. And I think we're going to struggle to score points because Georgia has a good defense. But I think that, you know, our goal here needs to be to grind the clock, huddle up, use 30, 35 seconds every snap, and play keep away. And I don't want Jalen to carry the ball more than five or six times. And I'd love to see Damian Harris have 22 carries. I'd love him to break his 19 from, you know, from this week. And if that happens, I think Jalen's this ball game.
No, I Jalen's going to get more than three or four or five carries. That'll happen. But I, you know, hey, if we say, you know, Damian, you know, we can get you 20, 25 carries. I like the way that sounds. And then kind of work in the other guys. I think of, you know, this is one of those matchup games, right? I think they match up really well, or we match up really well with us. I think they're the type that, you know, that we talk about. Reminds me of those old sort of NFL films that they play, and you get the sound clip of, you know, Mike Singletary saying, "I like this kind of party." Well, I think our players are saying, "We like this kind of matchup. We like this kind of party." And look, I guess I am predicting a win. I'm not saying that it's going to be a tight game. It's going to be a physical game, but I think this is just going to be a fun, old school kind of football game, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I think the key here is we have to be able to stop their run. And when Auburn won, you know, round one, they stopped the run. Round two, they didn't stop the run. And we are set up to stop the run. That is what we do well. And we play well against teams that don't have a mobile quarterback. And Jake Fromm is not a mobile quarterback. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's not that X factor, right? We can you know, play them straight up. We're going to dedicate, you know, guys to the line of scrimmage. We're going to see some more, you know, just four-man secondaries. Play some one-on-one on the back. We don't think the quarterback can beat that necessarily. And we don't have the X factor of the running quarterback that sort of throws all of that on its ear. I think it's going to be, you know, fun to see. And what's interesting is we have that. We might be the X factor in that kind of way. And so that's where I think we may see some more rushes from Jalen. But I'd like to see Damian get more than 19 carries. I think that would be, you know, that might be the watermark for what it takes to win.
No, absolutely. Well, man, anything else we got for the listeners?
We do. My computer crashed. We've got some emails, but my computer crashed, so I'm not able to get to those. But we did get a couple comments on the iTunes, and so I want to hit these. Some of these have been out there for there's just two, and they've been out there for a little bit, but we haven't been on the air in a while either. So we got JTC186. He sent us something. I've been listening for several years and love it. Feels like talking Alabama football with a couple buddies. Thank you for the great podcast and content. You guys provided insight and analysis. So you just can't get anywhere. Please figure out how to get more off-season shows. Help us get through the season. Love what you guys do. Keep it coming. I like the fact that we've had some people comment that they're new listeners. He commented that that they've been listening for several years and asking for more content. So that's awesome. That's great to hear. And then we got Grim Manager 0386. If you love Alabama football, you will love this podcast. Look forward to it every week. And I'm always impressed with the way they break down each game. I like the mini game balls and how obscure players are highlighted. These guys turn up the next year as stars in future future NFL draft. Only wish there was more than one episode per week. I may have read that one last week, last time. I can't remember. That sounded familiar, but heck, I like it. So there it is. A couple
of five-star reviews. When it's a good one, just read it more than one time, man. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So, you know, a couple of five-star reviews. Send us one of those, and we might read yours not once, but twice.
No, we appreciate the feedback, and, you know, we definitely want to try to get more content out to you guys, and we look forward to doing a show after this next ball game, hopefully another national championship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Tom, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.